with some monkey flip on, gorilla stomp on. I'm out here with the dealers pumping, the killers dumping. Dead bodies in Lake Michigan and shake fishermen.
Welcome, everybody, to the F-Ball NFL podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hanks, Browns and Steelers correspondent for BleacherReport.com, Pro Football Fantasy Football, Pro Football Focus Fantasy Football columnist. And starting first thing on Monday morning, I'll be covering breaking news around the National Football League for SportsNot.com. Right. So moving up in the world. I'm joined this week, like every week, by my co-host, Brian.
Hey, what's up now?
So we are getting ever closer to this year's NFL draft being held here in Chicago, Illinois. In fact, we are just 21 days or 3 weeks away from, at this point, now that we're recording here on Thursday night, 3 weeks away from round one of the draft being all wrapped up.
Yeah, it'll be here quicker than we can imagine.
Exactly. Sure. And that's why we are spending our podcast this week talking with NFL analyst from BleacherReport.com, Ty Shalter, who also has a weekly radio show, of course, on BR Radio on Sirius XM. We're going to talk with him about the teams around the NFL who need help in the secondary, both at safety and cornerback, ways that they've already addressed that or failed to address that, and the players that could be in high demand for these teams who are struggling to stop opposing offenses from passing all over them.
All right.
We talk a little bit about metrics on how to break down what a poor secondary may or may not be, and also just talk about, you know, basic draft strategy. So it's a good conversation, a thorough pre-draft conversation with a bright NFL mind, of course, in Ty Shalter.
Absolutely.
So after the break, we are going to commence with that. And after that, we, instead of doing our little giant book of football facts thing that we've been doing for the past year or so, we've got a new interactive segment for our listeners. So new interactive segment for our listeners. So be sure to listen all the way through this week's podcast to check out our new segment. But without further ado, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Bleacher Report's Ty Shalter to get us hyped up about the cornerbacks and the secondaries and the NFL draft that is fast approaching. So stay tuned here at the F-Ball NFL podcast.
Someone deceased made the front page, the priest prayed. He went to heaven, but the beast stayed. Now it's a war, and flowers for more. Funerals, you see who's soon to go a few hours before. It's just the same story. They cutting more keys with someone no D's in the same building on the same story. It's that ruthless drug addicts, toothless turn doofus.
Our guest this week here at the F-Ball NFL podcast is a repeat guest here.
Yes.
Welcome back.
He's an NFL analyst for BleacherReport.com. He is Ty Shalter. Welcome back, Ty.
Oh, my pleasure, Andrea. Thanks for having me back.
Of course. So you know, we got the draft coming up. We're slowly but surely barreling our way towards this year's NFL draft being held where we are here in Chicago, Illinois.
Yes.
And you got a lot of people, you know, everybody's kind of up in arms this week. Mike Mayock changed his ranking. And now he has Marcus Mariota over Jameis Winston. So the debate rages on about which quarterback is going to be taken first overall. There's a lot of debate about running backs. Are we going to see one or more running backs taken in the first round, which is kind of an anomaly at this point. And of course, how deep the draft class is at wide receiver, just like it was last year. But this year, I kind of want to talk about the secondary with cornerbacks and safeties, just because it seems like there are a lot of teams out there that really need to upgrade their secondaries. Some teams need to overhaul them entirely if they could.
Yeah.
And other teams just need to add, you know, one or two components that can actually make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's of course, it's part of the way the game has changed, the way the game has evolved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many receivers now, 3-4 wide. Obviously, you have the rise of the tight end, the joker tight end, athletic tight end. You know, you're defending 4 or 5 targets downfield. And, you know, you're seeing a lot more teams playing a lot more zone, a lot more quarters, you know, cover four coverage.
Right.
And, you know, you have to off man. There's a lot more off man coverage. That's technically very difficult to do for a corner. You know, if you're, you know, typically it's either a press, you know, man cover guy, or he's more of a zone guy. So now you need cornerbacks that are more versatile. And it seems like teams are just like quarterbacks. Cornerbacks are getting cycled through a little bit more. Teams are throwing, you know, prospects out there faster, giving up on them faster, you know, and kind of really mining and looking over every rock to try and find enough cornerbacks to cover all these receivers.
Yeah, you raise a good point there, where at this point, a lot of teams are running kind of, you know, out of a base nickel. And in those situations, you can have three cornerbacks on the field, you know, 70 or 80% of the plays in a game.
Right.
And when you have that situation, then not only do you need more talented cornerbacks to have on the field, you have to have more depth behind them, because now you're not really concerned about the depth behind these two boundary guys. You're worried about the depth all over the field.
Right, right. Absolutely. And we saw that in the free agency. You know, the prices that were being paid for corners was incredible.
Phenomenal.
You know,
phenomenal,
yeah.
Market
but
for
Byron
if you
Maxwell,
were a free agent cornerback this year.
Byron Maxwell just raked. I mean, he got paid so far above and beyond what his tape, what his production would justify at this point. I mean, you know, Lardarius Webb, Brent Grimes, Alteron Verner, who was last year's big free agent cornerback, you know, getting paid $1-3 million more per year or more in guaranteed money than any of those guys. You know, and he's obviously he's got size, he's got frame, he's got upside, he's got, you know, tools, but there's a lot of tape on Byron Maxwell, and he kind of is what he is, and he may have been in the best possible system for his tools, and he just got incredible money, and it went on down the line. You know, the Antonio Cromartie, obviously, you know, Chris Culliver, some of these guys, Buster Screen got
very well paid.
Paid to be like a fourth corner. He's going to be a slot guy in New York now, next to Revis, who obviously he blew out the curve, but he's Revis, so that's fine. You know, and Cromartie, Screen then is your nickel guy, you know, and you're busting down D. Milliner. From the guy that was supposed to come in and step in and replace Revis, now he's the fourth guy, maybe fifth guy in New York. So, yeah, it's crazy how much the Jets have invested in that secondary, and, you know, rightfully so. And now, I mean, gosh, you look at that defense, and how are they not a top five, top three unit? It's huge expenditures,
right.
But in that case, justified.
Especially with Bowles at the controls.
And the safety position, too, has kind of evolved in the way that the passing game has evolved, because now you know, a lot of teams don't really see a difference in what they're asking a free safety to do versus a strong safety. You need guys who can cover. You need guys who can hit. You need guys who are in run support, but you also need guys who can tackle. So at this point, you know, you're looking for safeties not just to lay the wood. You're looking for tackling. You're looking for coverage. You're looking for them to, you know, to be able to be a complementary piece to these cornerbacks and be kind of interchangeable in these roles, instead of being like, you're the strong safety and now you're in the box and maybe you'll blitz and you're the free safety and you're, you know, out there in coverage support and that's all you do. I mean, the safety position is, there's so much more, even more being demanded of it now.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, that's sort of John Lynch role, you know, of being that extra linebacker, the eighth man in the box that can come up and stop the run, come up and blitz. You know, that role, it's not like safeties aren't being asked to do that anymore, but you can't just do that. You cannot be a liability. And it's not just an athletic liability. And I think this is something that when we talk about the draft, and we talk about some of these prospects, we talk about evaluating these players, you know, coverage ability is so much more than deep speed and change of direction. You know, you can be fast, you can be quick, but you have to understand offense, you have to understand coverage, you have to understand scheme and responsibility. You know, if you are, in a lot of cases, and especially again when we talk about these slot receivers that are moving inside to outside, talking about these athletic tight ends that are lining up wide and breaking in, you know, either in deep dig routes or posts, corners, whatever. You have these, you know, these guys wheeling out of the backfield as H-backs and going down the seam. Yep. Obviously, the famous the Sluggo seam, you know, John Gruden with the slot receivers. You know, you're putting so much pressure on these safeties. They have to be able to read all these different guys. They have to have the field reading skills to know where they're supposed to be. Just being in the right spot at the right time is half the battle. So if you're a liability in coverage, you're not just the last line of defense anymore. If you're lining up man, you know, an off man over a slot receiver, you know, if they've got a T.Y. Hilton in the slot, you know, you're also the first line of defense. You cannot screw up. And if you get beat against an athlete of that caliber, you're toast.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
And so, you know, I was looking at some teams, 'cause I'm trying to figure out, just sort of organically using like my own research, trying to figure out what the worst secondaries in the NFL were last year. And I was, you know, looking at things like passing yards per game allowed or how many times a team threw against another team. But, of course, that doesn't tell the whole story because, of course, a lot of teams are going to throw against the Denver Broncos because Peyton Manning and that offense can score a lot of points and you kind of got to play catch-up. So when I drilled it down, what I noticed were – the teams that allowed the highest completion percentages, the teams that allowed the most pass touchdowns, were also the teams that showed up, especially on you know, Football Outsiders and Pro Football Focus's metrics of these, you know, bad players and bad secondaries. And and you kind of you see the same things lining up. Tampa Bay, Tennessee, Jacksonville.
Yes.
You know, you get Pittsburgh is definitely in there. But when you really look at it, you've got, like, the New York Jets, Oakland, Atlanta, and what I think, you know, just based on a couple other things I looked at, Washington, because a lot of people would say that Atlanta had the worst secondary last year, but you look at Washington and you look at some Pro Football Focus grades and you see the bottom 10 cornerbacks in the league last year and three of them played for Washington. You see the bottom 15 safeties and you keep seeing Washington come up. And I mean, that's a team that's going to need a lot of help. And you know, they added what, Chris Culliver in free agency, and you know, that's not going to solve these problems.
No, absolutely not. Washington has a huge problem, and I like their front seven. They keep adding nice pieces to that front seven, but cornerback, both cornerback and safety have really been you know, a revolving door for them for a long time. I mean, Brandon Merriweather was by far the best player on that secondary last season, and you know,
and
that doesn't
when you
say
Brandon Merriweather is the best player on the secondary.
That is
the story.
Another secondary that I don't, unfortunately, you guys, I don't want people to sleep on as being terrible in 2014. The Chicago Bears, I really like, you know, Kyle Fuller as a playmaker. You know, Tim Jennings played well-ish, but those safeties, that was a sore spot for 2-3 years running, and it's still a sore spot. That Patriots game, I mean, Rob Gronkowski, I mean, he just ran completely rampant. It was just pitch and catch. You know, Tom Brady was
he shredded them. They shredded this team.
And Gronkowski just, like, stiff arm. Yeah. Knee to the chest, see ya, elbow, out of the way. You know, it was like a Warner Brothers cartoon, you know, like Looney Tunes, like Bugs Bunny, just rocking through that secondary. And you know, you can't do that. You can't have that kind of liability in today's passing game because teams are just going to gain yards in chunks. It was interesting. You're talking about metrics, and this is one that, like you said, completion percentage, a couple other things like that. Kerry Byrne at coldhardfootballfacts.com has been railing for years that nobody will listen to him, that quarterback NFL passer efficiency rating, quarterback rating, is like the strongest determinant of success. When you talk about your quarterback rating versus your opponent's passer rating, you know, that correlates almost one-to-one with victory in the NFL over the last, you know, 15-20 years. And you know, when you sort by quarterback rating allowed by team, right now I'm looking at Pro Football Reference, Washington 1, Chicago 2, Jets 3, Jaguars, Steelers, all these teams. Yeah. You know, and Falcons actually were 18th. But you know, I think that's just, you know, mostly
indicative of the division they were playing in as well.
That's true.
I mean,
that's true. But
are you talking about total QBR?
No. Nobody's ever talking about.
No one's talking about.
Yeah, I just wanted to see if you were the first. You know, that was the only reason for the question.
I appreciate what ESPN tried to do with
it was a good attempt, but
yeah. But, you know, passer rating, you know, and as much as it double dips on completion percentage, it's funny. I went back and did a study on this, and, you know, the folks at Elias whopped that up in 1970 based off of 1960 to 1969, you know, 10 seasons, the previous 10 seasons. That's right. What it's all indexed off of. And what they used in terms of completion rate, touchdown rate, interception rate, sack rate, I mean – you know, they're really way ahead of the time, 40 years ahead of the time, 50 years ahead of the kind of things that we look at. You know, how many times on the screen are you watching an NFL game and it pops up, here's touchdown rate, interception rate, you know, as opposed to total numbers, as opposed to anything like that. You never see that. We're still seeing, you know, totals and averages as opposed to rates that they're actually being thrown at, you know, compared to their attempts, compared to their dropbacks. So, you know, really, it's way ahead of its time, and I still think it's a really useful tool compared both offensively and defensively when it comes to moving the ball through the air.
I absolutely agree. And you know, you put that all together, and basically that quarterback rating is a snapshot of – basically what I've seen here. Let's use Chicago as an example.
Sure.
So they gave up the third most passing yards per game on average this year.
Mm.
They allowed the third highest completion percentage to opposing quarterbacks, and therefore also allowed the second highest most pass touchdowns of any team in the season. So you put all of that together, and you can see that just in the QBR. Okay, of course that is what happened, because look at how successful quarterbacks were passing against this team this year.
Absolutely.
And you know, that stat sort of reflects these stats. It's, you know, it's like its own, you know, it's like mirrored.
Yeah they feed into each other, and of course it's always, you know, stats illuminate film illuminates stats, you know.
Exactly.
You see something and you go back and look at the stats and is that really what I saw? Am I seeing that right? And then you find stuff in stats and go, wait a minute, is that really right? I gotta go back and look at the film and see if that's really true. You know, but it's so, yeah, teams need cornerbacks, and especially NFC North, obviously with a receiving talent, quarterback talent, and the pass happy offenses in that division, you know, and maybe depending on what happens with a certain running back in Minnesota, maybe they're gonna be leaning a little harder on their passing game coming off this season too. You never know. And they're gonna be again looking for cornerbacks in the draft. It's funny to me because cornerbacks, this is one of those positions where, and I think NFL teams, just like quarterback, NFL teams and fans both fall into this trap over and over and over again and think that, you know, height, weight, speed, or, you know, for quarterbacks, you know, arm strength, college production, whatever,
sure.
You know, big frame, you know, size, whatever, you can look at the raw tools. Or not even tools, just look at the raw measurables and go, okay, this kid has great raw measurables, therefore he will step in and improve our secondary. And I think Justin Gilbert was a fantastic example of...
Oh, Justin Gilbert's a total example of that, because it turns out that he's kind of, he's some sort of head case or has quote-unquote issues.
Right.
And when you have measurables plus issues, what does that translate to on the field?
Issues, and it doesn't help when you go to a team, you know, that has issues, especially
that
in terms
has
of
issues inherently. Yeah,
yeah, and so, you know, cornerback is one of those positions, and wide receiver too. You know, obviously the positions mirror each other, where development really is a thing. You know, you look at Odell
Beckham.
Learning
curves are really steep for both of those positions.
Yes, you look at Odell Beckham, and you know everybody wants Odell Beckham. You know, but you look at Kelvin Benjamin, and he was productive as a rookie. But he was productive as a rookie because A, he has freaky measurables. B, he was the only target on the field, and Cam Newton locked onto him and fed him.
Well, he's a huge dude. Why not?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. But in terms of, you know, how well was he running his routes? How often, how reliably was he catching the ball?
Yeah.
You know, he was making circus plays here and there, and he had better games than others, you know, but there were stretches where the only reason he was putting up numbers was because he was the only guy getting thrown to, and you know, there's only so unsuccessful you can be when you're that talented and given that many reps, that many passes. And you look at a guy like Justin Gilbert, who's got all the measurables, what comes onto a team where, okay, you know, there's Joe Haden there. You know, Buster Skrin is there. You're going to have to come in and outplay these guys as a rookie. You know, there's not an amount of tall or fast that you can be if your technique is not there, if you don't understand the system, you know, if you're not comfortable in what you're being asked to do, you know, if you're getting burned, then, you know, you're not going to play. You're not going to get those opportunities. And so I think people, you know, Draftniks last year fell in love on pure measurables. And, you know, this year I feel like the same thing is going to happen where people fall in love with measurables and, you know, don't stop and think, you know, this is a thing that develops. And I'm going to, you know, raise my hand and say, you know, as a guy who covered, you know, blogged about the Detroit Lions forever, I've always been a Detroit Lions fan. You know, the Detroit Lions blogosphere has been screaming for a cornerback in the first round for years on end.
Sure.
And every year they took Darius Slay in the second a couple years ago. You know, but like last season, they're, oh, we need to get Justin Gilbert. And it's like, okay, well, explain to me how Justin Gilbert is definitively better than Darius Slay. Well, he's tall and fast. Okay, yeah, but Darius Slay was tall and fast last year. Now he's got 1 year of development and has actually proven he can play at this level. Justin Gilbert's still an unknown quantity.
He's never played an NFL game.
We don't know that he's going to be an improvement. If you need a cornerback to step in and excel now, today, what that tells you is you should have drafted a cornerback in the first round last year or the year before so that they are ready to be at that level. Now, I believe cornerback is a position that you have to draft ahead for, have to plan for, because so few of them step in. I mean, even guys like Patrick Peterson. Patrick Peterson is, you know, he's the Calvin Johnson of cornerback prospects. And for all the attention he got as a rookie with his, you know, punt returns, kick returns and stuff, I mean, he was not good as a cover corner.
And it took him to maybe the last four or five games of the season for him to start looking like the light turned on.
He was not good in coverage. He certainly wasn't shutting people down. You know, you look at the cornerbacks this year, you know, the guy that really blew people away at the combine was Trey Waynes. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously he had the fastest 40-yard line when he was 40-yard dash when he wasn't expected to. You look at a guy like Ronald Darby from Florida State. He's, you know, 5'11", 193, doesn't have the crazy measurables. But I actually think, you know, right now the top corners, just in terms of pro readiness, smoothness of his movements, the way that translates to the game, he's the guy that I like the most. I think he'll have the smoothest transition to the NFL. But obviously, you know, there are other guys, Jalen Collins, Marcus Peters. There's still, you know, Matt Miller was saying on Twitter today, Marcus Peters from Washington obviously got kicked off the team. There's character questions, you know, but he said that he's got him ranked so much higher as a prospect than he thinks NFL teams will draft him because of those questions. You know, Peters could step in and play pretty quickly. You know, but again, for me, I really like Ronald Darby. I think he might have the fastest transition to the NFL, but even so, he's not a you know, 6'2", 205 guy. He's not a absolute eraser. He's not a Deion Sanders. He's not anything like that. He's a very good, solid prospect, great athlete, you know, but not a dominant force. And if you are the Chicago Bears, if you are, you know, the Atlanta Falcons looking for a pair to Desmond Trufant, you're looking for, if you're in Washington and going, we need Ronald Darby to come in and anchor our secondary, you know, I feel like you're setting yourself up and possibly Darby up for failure.
So circling back to the New York Jets, you know, it's obviously a new front office and all of that, new coaching staff, but they're not in the mood to develop a cornerback or at least bring a quarterback in and develop him on the field again this year. You know, they're going with the Revis Cromartie screen thing. I feel like that doesn't preclude them from drafting any cornerbacks because this is an expensive trio that isn't long for this team. So eventually somebody's going to be developed in their place. But I can understand why they decided, you know, they had the money and decided to bring Revis back, bring Cromartie back, bring Skrin in. Because I go back to these little numbers that I've been compiling. And the New York Jets didn't allow a top 10 highest completion percentage last year. They didn't allow a top 10 most passing yards thrown on them, but they were third in allowing the most passing touchdowns. They were getting burned in scoring situations with the pass, whether that's yards after the catch or in the red zone. So I can totally see why they're looking at these guys where Skrin, you know, he stepped in pretty well as a boundary corner for the Browns last year, but has that slot background, and he's very good at it. You've got Cromartie who can you know, he can really hold his own. Revis is Revis. And there's I look at this trio and I look at what they were in the secondary last year, and I'm saying,
yeah,
they want to stop the touchdown. They got to stop that touchdown.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also, I think it's a great, when you look at the AFC East now, how this team matches up. If I'm looking at the Miami Dolphins,
yeah,
I'm not even sure who their third receiver is at this point, because they cut, yeah, just about all of them. But, you know, whoever the Dolphins' third receiver is against Buster Screen, I like that. You know, but like, I like Robert Woods or you know, Marquise Goodwin. Like, I like those guys. But against, as the third guy against Buster Screen, you know, I think that's a great matchup for the Jets. And even against New England, you know, you're taking, you know, if Edelman's in the slot, Edelman against Screen, you could certainly do worse for a third cornerback matchup. Or if it's Amendola, you know, I think Screen has a huge athleticism advantage there. You know, I really think they're set up very, very well against the AFC East. And of course, they have the defensive line. Of course, they have the pass rushing. Actually, I think pass rushing, that's going to be another one where I'm really interested to see where they go. I could see the Jets trying to go edge rusher, because there's a lot of, you know, sort of weird tweener edge rushers in this draft. Again,
oh, yeah,
this feels like the third or fourth draft in a row we've got a bunch of weird tweener edge rushers. Mm-hmm. You know, how long can Calvin Pace keep playing out there?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I would really like to see if the Jets are just going all in. Let me back up a little bit when you say they could draft somebody to develop. I think that depends on Milliner. I think if they can flip Milliner for a pick, you know, then maybe they draft another corner if they still have Milliner. You know, he was limited so much by injury. And again, here's another guy, you know, size, tools, you know, everything you want to see in a rookie. Mm-hmm. You let Revis go, put in Milliner and go, save our franchise, save our defense.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Because
it's not
going to
happen.
Even when Rex Ryan was being so adamant, this guy does not replace Revis because you can't. You can't still get that out of a guy's head. You can't get that out of Milliner's head that it's just like, you're doing Revis's job. You know,
yeah,
that's
no, absolutely. And then you let all the other corners, you know, you let so many of the corners go, you know, there was nobody else on that roster.
Yeah.
That was going to be the shutdown. There was no Cromartie, you know, there was no number two, there's no wingman. It was Milliner. You have to shut down number one corners from the second you step on the field. And that's just not realistic for almost any rookie cornerback. And you know, he was not bad, he was not terrible, he was just not a quality number one cornerback from the get-go. So I think it'd be a mistake to let Milliner go unless you can get a better pick than I think the Jets could get for him at this juncture.
And you know, the other interesting thing about the Jets is that they have that great front seven, and they could add pass rush to it, because why not? I mean, teams are getting a lot more rotational in the front seven, a lot more situational. Maybe you want a specific size or style of pass rusher in for a specific play that you're seeing on with your opposing offenses. But you know, the other thing too is, you know, you can, if you want to get some cornerbacks and you have a weak secondary and you know it's going to take a year or two for these guys to really develop, you also can obviously boost your front seven, boost your pass rush, and hope that you can kind of gain some extra dividends against the pass that way.
Yeah.
And so at least, you know, because there are a lot more teams that are demanding, who require secondary help, then there are going to be players who can provide that in year one, year two. So at the very least, there's the depth of pass rushing talent that can at least work to mask some of these weaknesses in some of these secondaries, but not all the weaknesses, and definitely not in all of these secondaries.
Right. And it was really interesting how long any of the older cornerbacks had to wait, considering how many teams need help now. You know, Tremont Williams was out there forever before Cleveland picked him up, which I thought was a really nice move, by the way. I thought that was
I think it's
smart,
their best move of free agency.
Definitely. Easily. And you know, he's on the wrong side of 30, but there's nothing we've seen on him in the last couple of years on the field to believe that he can't step onto the field this year and be just fine.
He'll be productive this year. He's not a guy that you're going to have out there for five more years, but a year, maybe 2 years at the most. Sure.
Yeah. And that's what you need. You know, if you're looking at, I need secondary help this season, I think as a team, you're way better off taking you know, rolling the dice on a 32-year-old, 31-year-old guy and going, okay, we're going to get him for, you know, at this level for another year or two, versus drafting, you know, blowing a first or second round pick on a guy and going, look, we're going to throw you out there and either you sink or swim. And if you sink, and you're probably going to sink, we're going to give up on you and do it again in 2 years. You know, I just don't think that's a smart way to build your team.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, another example of that, you know, and there's the connection there between coach and player is Terrence Newman going to the Minnesota Vikings. And to me, that says the Vikings plan on drafting a cornerback, maybe in round one, maybe in round two, and they're going to develop that guy because Terrence Newman is 35, 36 years old. He can still play. He knows Mike Zimmer, obviously.
Right.
But clearly he was brought in because the idea of taking a rookie and trying to throw him in there is just – it's not appealing if you don't have to do it. And as compared to wide receiver, which has a steep learning curve, you can kind of hide him in there. Either you have a big guy who has circus catches and red zone ability like Kelvin Benjamin, or you throw him in there into an established receiving core. So, you know, you can hide that receiver a little bit better than you can hide that first-year cornerback without him getting exposed.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And because, you know, for some reason, you know, you can get an outside receiver, move them into the slot, and it works. You know, that can be amazing in the slot, but that's still a threat. And you can shift your offense around a little bit, shift your route concepts a little bit, you know, so the deep threat is coming from the slot or going from inside to out. It just seems, though, that, you know, if you've got somebody who's an outstanding outside corner prospect, you know, move them into the slot, it doesn't always translate right away into the ability to cover the slot just because their types of receivers you're covering are different. The types of routes you're covering are different. You know, you don't have the ability to use the sideline as a boundary, you know, as an extra defender, you know, shut off that side of the field, or push the, you know, to redirect the receiver outside or inside, depending on how you know, the responsibilities dictate. So it almost seems like if you try and move them inside to hide them, you're actually exposing them, you know, if they're not, if that's not their strong suit. And you know, I was just flipping through a couple of some of the older corners that are outside, and actually in Detroit here, Sean Mathis, you know, he's going to turn, I believe, 35 this summer, and that's another guy where you know the Lions might want to upgrade, might want to get somebody in there, but productivity wise, I mean, he hasn't fallen off. He's still playing at a really high level, and they're not likely to find somebody who's going to step in and play at a higher level. So if you let him go because he's quote unquote too old, you know, you're really rolling the dice that you can find somebody who can step right in and take over in that role.
Yeah, because it's looking like, because there are a lot of talented, at least you got the college production, you got the measurables. There are a lot of seemingly talented cornerbacks, especially on the top end of this draft. You know, we talked about Marcus Peters, Trey Waynes, Jalen Collins, Darby, Eric Rowe from Utah, and of course, Kevin Johnson from Wake Forest. But these guys, regardless, are going to need development. You know, you can't just be a team like Washington and say, oh, wow, all of our corners are terrible. These guys have tremendous ceilings, but it's a matter of when they're going to reach that, and it's very rare for that to happen in year one. So I'm just really curious to see how, you know, these teams are kind of, I wouldn't say overvaluing cornerback, because if it's a need and something you need to develop, by all means, go for it. But, you know, the ceilings are very high, but they're going to take time to fully achieve.
I'll be curious to see if there's a run early on the cornerbacks, and it may, you know, fall on whether Matt Miller's right about Marcus Peters in terms of, you know, how high he values him versus NFL teams. Because if Marcus Peters goes in Miller's post combine big board, he has Peters 12th overall as a prospect. Okay. So if Peters goes up in the top 10, top 15. I think there's a big slide, 10, 15 spots up the board for everybody else versus if Peters goes, you know, at 20, 25, you know, somewhere in that range. So if he goes up way up there, all of a sudden everybody slides up. And I think, you know, Peters comes off the board, Collins or Darby comes off the board at 20. All of a sudden, this next group of people, Trey Waynes, you know, maybe Byron Jones, you know, maybe PJ Williams, there's a lot of possible players that could sneak up then all of a sudden in the back of that first round, early second round. And if there's a run, kind of what happened with the receivers last season, where there's so right. many teams thinking, oh, this is a deep receiver class. We can cut all our receivers, Carolina, and just, you know, draft whoever's sitting there at the end of the first round, expecting the third best receiver or the fourth right. best receiver in a deep class to be sitting there. And then all of a sudden you go, oh, well, now we just have to take the sixth best receiver, the sixth receiver off the board, because we bet everything on having a receiver there to take. You know, it's the same right. thing. You know, if you were sitting there, if, you know, I should have the draft board up while we're talking about this. But if you're one of the teams that needs a corner that's a little bit lower on the draft board, let's say, for example, that the Lions, you know, the, uh-huh. what, 23, decide, okay, we're going to go all, we're going to draft a corner this year. This is the year you go in on the first rounder, and hey, there's four or five that we really like, and all those five come off the board. All of a sudden, you know, you're reaching for you know, a Kevin Johnson or something there at the bottom of the first round, because all of your you painted yourself into that corner, and then right. there was a run, and now you've got to take the next guy there. I'll be very curious to see if that shakes out like that.
You know, you mentioned Ronald Darby earlier as a cornerback you really like. A cornerback I like is Kevin Johnson from Wake Forest. You know, people have some concerns about him regarding his size. He had that foot injury, but he came back from that foot injury, showed up in 7 games and caught 43 passes, which I think is pretty good production coming off of something caught 43, sorry, deflected 14 pass. Sorry, I got wrong numbers here.
No, that's okay. I was like, I'm sure that makes sense in a way I don't understand.
Yeah, sure. There's something 43 in it. But you know, he's got a smaller frame. Some people are kind of concerned about that. But what I really like about him is that he's played on the outside. He's played on the inside. You know, he's played zone, he's played man, he's played press man in college. And I think, you know, while he comes from Wake Forest, which obviously is not, you know, we're not talking about Alabama or LSU or Wisconsin or something here, that's still a pretty impressive skill set to have going into the NFL. So I think where you're at with Ronald Darby, I think is kind of where I'm at with okay. Kevin Johnson. And I'm kind of curious to see where he'll go, because I think in the same level that you're at, where you think that Darby has a top 15 potential, but maybe won't go that high. I'm on the same thing with Kevin Johnson as another kind of barometer to see where teams are with yeah. how they view these corners and how badly they need one.
Yeah, and another one, of course, close to home for me is Trey Waynes at MSU. You know, and obviously
he's a little grabby, but other than that, I like him.
A little grabby. Well, it's interesting, because this is the whole thing was, you know, last season it was, okay, Darquez Dennard, physical, polished, press guy, man coverage. You wish he had more athleticism. You wish he had better deep speed. And Trey Waynes is basically Darquez Dennard with the deep speed, and maybe not even as grabby as Dennard was at Michigan State. And again, this is one of the interesting things about the power programs. You talk about Wake Forest, you know, Kevin Johnson, they're using him all over the field, using him in all these different roles. A lot of times the elite defenses, the Michigan States, Ohio States, the Alabamas, you start looking at them and schematically they're very, very rigid in what they do, and especially in that back seven, what they ask their secondary to do, because this is how they get success. As the, you know, the game has evolved, especially at the college level, so many spread offenses, so many 4-5 wide, so many complicated route concepts, you know, mm-hmm. like we talked earlier, you're putting way more stress on the safeties and on the cornerbacks to understand what they have to do. How do you combat that? Make it schematically rigid. Give them simple keys, simple schemes. You know, Michigan State runs cover four almost every single down. They run that quarters. You know, the cornerbacks know what they have to do. The safeties know what they have to do. It's very simple decisions, so they can make those decisions correctly time after time. You know, and so if you have a schematically limited thing, you know, you've got these physical talents, you know, who could project very well to the NFL, you know, but you wonder if you're not going to run a similar system, are they going to have, you know, a harder transition? This is, I mean, the Alabama cornerback thing is practically a joke at this point.
Yes, that, yes, you know, the cliche of the Alabama corner.
Right, exactly. You know, you get side straddlers, or, you know, whatever, you know, techniques that don't. By the way, Byron Maxwell, also a side straddler.
Yes.
You know, I was watching that film. I'm like, oh my gosh, how did you just pay like $12 million a year to a guy who doesn't backpedal? Anyway.
Yeah, this guy's going to pull his groin in week three doing that stuff.
Yeah. So you know, maybe the big power programs is not where it's at. We talked to on BRNFL's Inside Read, Jason Cole and I did, a couple of safeties. And it was, oh my gosh, from TCU, Chris Hackett. We talked to him, and as a free safety, you know, as a strong safety or a free safety, and we just talked about how the distinctions between those two roles are disappearing. Uh-huh. Chris Hackett, you know, he talked about all the spread offenses in his conference. You know, sure, they have to have those responsibilities. They have to be aware of it. They're coming in, having to read all these different guys. They have a much more complicated scheme they have to run. And, you know, they have to, and especially when you talk about the up-tempo offenses, the Chip Kelly type offenses, he said, you know, we have to cut down our reads and calls as much as we can, because we have to get those calls in quick, you know. And he's like, so sometimes, you know, we're trying to now play speed, you know, speed read, speed signals in. He's like, and sometimes we can't even get a signal in because they're getting the ball, you're snapping it so fast. So
right, right,
they have to rely on each other's ability, and they have to have all that stuff hammered out and know where everybody else has to be on the field, maybe more so than your Michigan States and your Alabamas, just because the variety and complexity of the schemes that they're facing. And maybe that gives them more tools, more versatility, and maybe some of the smaller program defensive backs actually project better.
Yeah, and you know, but transitioning, let's talk about the safety position in this year's draft.
Sure.
Because like offensive line, for me, I think that there's kind of a crisis of safety play in the NFL.
Yeah.
With offensive linemen, you know, you've got guys who are better at run blocking, better at pass protecting, but now you need these athletic guys, but you need them to be big. But you need them to pass protect, but you need them to be able to pull. And it's hard to find guys who can do all of these things, especially when you've got, you know, more and more guys coming from spread offenses. So you have more athletic offensive linemen, but that doesn't necessarily fit what NFL teams do. And you got the same kind of situation with safeties, and it is catching up in the NFL, because as we were saying, the lines are basically blurring between strong and free safety. But this year's draft class, it's considered quite thin at safety. I would kind of counter that and say it's better at strong safety if you are looking for having those distinctions in your secondary. Because to me, a free safety has to be, you know, if you're doing those distinctions, a free safety has to be good in coverage and has to be able to tackle. To me, a strong safety is, he's fast and he can hit, but he's not really great in coverage, so let's put him at strong safety. And so we have a lot of guys in this year's draft class who, to me, are strong safety, you know, prototypes in the sense that they're fast and they can hit. But you don't have a lot of good coverage safeties this year, and that's what teams need more and more of. And I'm kind of curious to see how that plays out, because you look at all these draft rankings, you look at all these big boards, and there's such a huge drop-off between, if you want to do the distinction with Cody Pruitt of Ole Miss at free safety, and then you go down from there, there's a big drop to the next free safety, or Landon Collins from Alabama, and then it's a big drop to your next strong safety. So I'm really curious to see how this plays out in the draft, because I feel like almost every team in the NFL, for one reason or another, is in need of additional safety assistance, and there just isn't enough of them and enough talent right there to go around, clearly.
Yeah, well, you think of why is it a strong safety? Well, a strong safety is the strong side where the tight end is, and
right,
the strong safety is on the side where the tight end is, because teams are running to the side where the tight end is, and also the tight end is slow and doesn't catch the ball, so it doesn't matter if the safety on that side can't cover deep. You know, that's not how tight ends are anymore at all in the NFL.
Right. It's completely changing from that. Here's Heath Miller, and he's a throwback.
Yes, exactly. And you know, you're looking now at the strong safety and go, okay, I'm going to take, you know, my big fast guy who likes to hit but can't cover, and I'm going to put him on the side where Jimmy Graham is.
Right.
No.
And he's going to try to shoulder check Jimmy Graham, and nothing's going to happen.
Yes. No. It's not going to work. And yeah, you're right. That really the coverage has to be, and you know, and not to step too far back, too big picture, but you know, we've got a crisis of quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Got a crisis of offensive linemen.
Oh yeah.
We've got a crisis at safety.
Yes.
We have all these tweener edge rushers mm-hmm. and specialist running backs nobody wants anything to do with. And too many wide receivers, you know, tons of wide receivers, and we want wide receivers.
Tons of wide receivers.
and so it's so weird how the college game is feeding the pro game right now, because, you know, colleges are taking these raw talents and going, I will deploy these raw talents so they have to learn as little about how to play football as possible and do as much damage as fast as I can. I'm going to pluck this five-star, I'm going to drop him into my offense. You know, I'm going to play him as a redshirt freshman or as a true sophomore. You're going to be a starter, you know, and whatever. I'll do whatever I have to do schematically to make it simple for him to excel. You know, it's like, okay, I've got Percy Harvin. You know, what am I going to do? I'm going to have Tim Tebow throw him the ball from 4 feet away, and I'm going to have a convoy block for Percy Harvin and left.
Right, and have an 80-yard touchdown. That's have an 80-yard touchdown.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. But I'm going to have everybody thinking, you know,
Tim Tebow just threw an 80-yard touchdown.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Tim Tebow just threw an 80-yard touchdown pass. Percy Harvin just beat a defense for 80 yards. That's the takeaway everybody's going to get from that. And right. So, you know, really the craft is being lost, because then these NFL teams have the same quandary. They get these raw talents who, mm-hmm. you know, and even the receivers, you know, Kelvin Benjamin doesn't run the whole route tree well. You know, he's not a polished NFL receiver. You know, he's not a polished prospect. And right. even Odell Beckham, I mean, incredibly productive, you know, a fantastic player, blew away everybody's expectations, you know, but you're not expecting him to be a number one the same way that Jerry Rice was a number one. You're asking him to do what he does well, and he does it very, very, very well.
Yes.
But there's still things that he can improve on in his game. You know, none of these guys are walking into the NFL as a polished, you know, fifth year senior type guy, the kind of understanding of how to play the whole position. And, you know, we see that in linebackers. You know, we have so many of these guys who are basically either, you know, one dimensional pass rushers, and where they line up on the line or in space is dictated basically by their frame. And not even then, because you'll still have a 3-4 team take Jadeveon Clowney number one overall and go, well, he's not a defensive end in our system. He's not an outside linebacker in our system. But it doesn't matter, because have you looked at him? He can rush the passer. We'll figure right. out the whole play.
He can cause disruption.
Later. Yep.
Put him in.
Just put him in, throw him out there. He'll wreck people, and we'll deal with whatever we have to deal with on the backside.
Yeah, and that's exactly, you know, that's the thing that's part of what ties into the crisis at quarterback, O-line, safety, is that these guys are specialized for specific use in specific collegiate schemes, and the NFL does not I mean, they're adapting, clearly, but
right.
they generally don't run their teams that way. They want guys who can come in and run this particular coach's NFL offense or this coach's NFL defense. And there has to be some increasing malleability there for yeah. these NFL coaches to recognize that this NFL style, this NFL system, you can't just take these kinds of players, plug them into it, and expect the same kind of production, the same kind of success, either in the short or the long term. And they're going to have to adapt the way that they go about building an offense, how they approach building a defense, in order to maximize the kinds of talents that are coming out of college at this point, because it's so specialized, it's so specific. You know, it's not even just scheme or team dependent, but it's, okay, what are we going to do with this player? Because this guy is a five-star this, or this guy was incredible in basketball in high school. Let's turn him into something else in college. And,
right.
And trying to do the same thing, you know, translating that same kind of philosophy to the NFL is going to be crucial.
Yeah, it's funny, because we flip-flopped a couple times, and I've had this out on Twitter a couple times, which we call college style and pro style, because
right.
you know, when we were kids, you know, a pro style offense meant
drop back passer.
Yes, drop back passer.
In the pocket, giant offensive lineman.
Right, and occasionally featured, because we've flipped it around now, where a pro style offense used to mean sometimes there's a third receiver on the field.
Yeah.
You know, like, wow, like crazy, yeah. right? What these crazy pro teams are doing nowadays, they're slot receivers, and they're running backs who catch passes. Wow,
running
God,
backs catching passes on third downs.
Yeah. It's nuts, you know, and then that's sort of flipped now, where, you know, when we say pro style, we mean, there's a running back and at least a tight end, or maybe also a fullback, and the quarterback is under center instead of in shotgun. And
quarterback's, you know, under center is really what half the people mean.
Yeah. That, well, but the thing is, that's not even happening anymore. I've been looking
at this. I know.
This is insane. Like I'm trying to remember exactly which team it was, but like the team that used shotgun the least last year used it. I think it was the Ravens, and I think it was like 47% of the time.
Yeah.
And
that sounds like, about right.
Most of these teams are in shotgun 60, 70, 80% of the time. I think the Eagles were in shotgun on like 89% of offensive snaps. So the idea of a pro style offense being one where the quarterback is under center is that's just not how it is anymore. So we've almost flip flopped where it used to be you go to college, you learn how to play the game, you learn the position, you learn the craft, you go to the NFL, and then you get honed down into a specific scheme. Now it's the other way around, where it's such a coach heavy thing. You know, you start out raw, you go into college, you know, you get hammered into one specific scheme, you learn that well enough, and then you go to the NFL, and then either you fit into somebody else's scheme or you don't, and you get chewed up and spit out. And in a lot of cases, there isn't any development. These players aren't learning that, you know, it's only the very best who hang on the longest, who happen to go to the right coach, you know, who happen to go to the right scheme where it's a fit, and they get a chance to develop. They get a chance to fail and not immediately lose their jobs. So in a sense, I was actually talking about this. I did an article on that whole basketball power forward to tight end thing, and I asked Ted Sundquist, former Broncos general manager, longtime player personnel executive, you know, is at the top end of the NFL expertise on how to play football being lost forever? You know, we talk about guys like, you know, Junior Seau or Teddy Bruschi, guys who are just football players, people who understand the game at a very, very, very deep level.
Right, they understand the fundamentals, and they don't need to be reminded how to tackle, and it's just part of their being. Football.
Right. And they could play in a 3-4 or a 4-3 if they were asked to. They can switch teams and be okay. You know, nobody was sitting around. You know, when Seau went from the Chargers to Miami to New England, nobody was sitting around going, well, how will Junior Seau project the Bill Belichick defense? You know, it's like it was just taken for granted. He's an inside linebacker. He's a tremendous inside linebacker. You know, he's not the athlete he used to be, but he knows what to do in defensively. He understands defense. He understands what's being asked of him. He understands, you know, you could just go, here's what we want to do. He'll go, okay, and do it, you know, versus, you know, these other players move to even free agents, you know, move teams, and you go, you have no idea whether some of these players are going to be any good in their new homes because we've never seen them in anything other than that system, and they're not being taught all this way. You know, we can't take for granted that a player who went to a big program and played 4 years at a NFL, you know, at a good NFL team, a well-coached NFL team. Look at Nnamdi Asamoah. I mean, that's example A1 right there. He went
to
Oakland.
This is the third time Nnamdi Asamoah has come up in my life in the last 5 days, and I would just like to say it's kismet, and I'm sure we're about to hear something about, like, his latest charitable project in like the next 2 days.
Certainly. Wow, that's what I'm excited to be a part of whatever fated thing is about to happen here. It's very exciting. But you know, Nnamdi Asamoah did one thing incredibly well. Got drafted by the Raiders to do that one thing. They asked him to do nothing but that one thing. And also it happened to be that he, for the most part, was on a defense where he was doing that one thing so well and nobody else is doing anything well, so nobody bothered to test him ever. And, you know, then he goes to the Eagles, and there's all these quotes. I've written about this before. So many quotes by the Eagles, you know, by Andy Reid, by the Eagles' various defensive coordinators and or offensive line coaches transition to defensive coordinators. You know, it's like, oh, we're going to take him. We're going to move him around the field. We're going to have him play zone. We're going to have him play in the, you know, nickel, the slot. We're going to drop him back as like a free safety, have him just play center field. It's like, what about Nnamdi Asamoah? He's never done any of that. Why would you pay millions and millions and millions of guaranteed dollars to come and ask a guy to do a whole bunch of things that he's never been asked to do at any level and sit there and tell yourself, I can reasonably expect this man to succeed. He's just going to excel because these guys are, you know, they're not being developed that way. They're not being taught that way.
Also, some breaking news just came down that's actually relevant to what we're talking about. Troy Polamalu, longtime Pittsburgh Steelers strong safety, has announced his retirement.
Ooh.
There was kind of a stalemate going on between whether the Steelers were going to release him or Polamalu was going to decide to retire, and the Steelers gave him as much space and time as he needed to make his decision, and he has announced his retirement from the game of football. So that's another another kind of old school safety. That's another example of the changing of the guard at this position, really.
Yeah, well, and really, Polamalu, you know, he's become more old school as he's aged, unfortunately.
Sure.
You know, I mean, he had, you know,
but he revolutionized the position in certain ways.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, he had that athleticism. He had that ability to come up and hit, love to hit, obviously.
The instincts,
Had the instincts. Yeah, sure. And when the play was in front of him, though, he could still definitely cover. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he's not a guy that you would want, you know, flipping hips and running downfield with number one receivers necessarily, but like, you know, in terms of coverage, in terms of being in the right place at the right time, in terms of picking passes off, jumping routes, getting in front of passes, you know, obviously he could do plenty of that. And even now, in his obviously diminished state, he was still a very effective safety, and again was found himself in the right place in the right time an awful lot, and still obviously can hit. Yeah, I'm just looking real quickly here. You know, some of his stats, trying to come up with a good. You know, he allowed a lot of completions, but not a ton of yak, not a ton of deep cover. You know, he wasn't getting burned or anything like that.
No, he wasn't getting burned. He would give up completions, but he wouldn't give up yards after that completion.
Right, and half the time, that's all you can ask for,
especially from a safety.
yeah, absolutely.
If safeties could cover, they'd play corner, right?
Right. Exactly. You know, and it's funny, that's somebody we haven't talked about yet. Shaq Thompson.
Yes.
He's a guy, he's the only defensive back that I've done any super extensive film work, watched, you know, 4, 5, 6 games and really broken down what he can do. And of course, you know, Matt Miller has him ranked as an outside linebacker. Some teams think his best position is actually running back. Chris Peterson at Washington said that his best position is running back, but Shaq's smart enough to know that the lifespan of a running back in the NFL is not long. So,
right.
I really see I hesitate to say Polamalu, like, but a guy as a safety who can be in the box. That's roughly similar sizes. I mean, he's bigger. Shaq Thompson is, but you know, if the play is in front of him, he has the instincts to fly up and make plays. You know, if you drop him back in coverage, he has the ability to diagnose where that ball is coming and be there. He actually reminded me, the closest comp I have of anybody I've looked at recently is Kiko Alonso, who's a fantastic coverage linebacker. And same thing, you know, he reads the play as it's happening. He anticipates, he breaks, he makes plays. And I see the same sort of thing in Thompson, where, you know, if you put him back as a quote-unquote strong safety, really almost like a Thomas Davis. Also,
right.
He was another guy when he was younger, before the injuries, much more athletic of a player than he is now. But, you know, you can put him back there and he's not going to get roasted. But as long as the play is in front of him, you know, he can come up and pop people. He can come up and break up passes, come up and he'll jump some routes and make some picks. And yeah, and if the ball is on the ground, if it's running is what is happening, he will fly up and find a way. Even if he's on the backside of a play, you know, he will come up and find that guy, and maybe, you know, again, he's not the biggest guy at the point of attack. You know, he makes a lot of unlikely ankle tackles. You know, he runs up and kind of gets it and like manages to get the ankles and bring the guy down, or be the first guy on the scene and somebody else cleans up. But you can be that guy that makes that initial play versus letting the guy run free for 5, 6 yards, you know, and forcing somebody to make the play that far downfield. It's really helpful. I see Shaq Thompson as a safety, a versatile safety, probably play a different role in nickel defense than he would on first down. But even then, every down is a passing down, just like we've been talking about. In today's NFL, you know, you're in nickel more often than not against their shotgun more often than not, and you want somebody with, like Polamalu, with those instincts. So maybe we connect dot A to dot B and see if Shaq Thompson is the type of guy that the Steelers might be interested in. And I think that's roughly the right spot on the draft board for him too, depending on who's fallen in love with him. You know, his disappointing combine times, all the TCU guys. Yeah. I'm sorry, not TCU guys. Oh, he's not one of the purple. My brain just connected to purple. I'm sorry. but, you know, he's one of the guys that really disappointed in terms of measurables. And you know, people were expecting him to put up like nasty, you know, clowny type for his size numbers, and he just didn't. But he's a tremendous football player. He might be somebody the Steelers might be interested in drafting, is all I'm saying.
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, I've seen a lot of mock drafts that have linked the Steelers to Alabama's Landon Collins. And, you know, I feel like, you know, he's considered such a high-quality safety. I don't see Collins falling all the way to 22 for the Steelers. And I'm not entirely certain that Collins is exactly what they're looking for in a strong safety. You know, all I know is I would hope that whether it's Collins or Shaq Thompson, whoever they pick up, they're able to find somebody to fill in for Polamalu, because right now Mike Tomlin is considering the possibility of moving free safety Mike Mitchell to strong safety, and I just feel like that's a bad move. I mean, I guess it makes sense because Mike Mitchell is not a very good tackler, and then you kind of, oh, well, you know, he had a few sacks when he was with Oakland, and a couple of sacks when the 1 year he spent with the Panthers. Maybe he has that strong safety blitzing ability that they really like in Pittsburgh. But at the same time, he's more of a liability, and I think that bringing in somebody who has those Polamalu-esque instincts and somebody that they can develop in that same way would be a better use. So I am really curious to see if and you know, depending on what teams think about Shaq Thompson, because he is so kind of polarizing, where teams wanted him to work out at running back at the scouting combine, that he could be a second round target for the Steelers. You know, it really just depends on how they view him, how they perceive other teams could possibly view him. But he's definitely someone to watch. You know, with who drafts him, you know, we'll kind of figure out what kind of player they think he is and where he's drafted.
I'd be really surprised, honestly, if he fell through the second round. You know, there are some people who just flat out love him. I think Mayock had him number one, certainly the number one safety, maybe number one defensive back going into the combine, you know, before he put up those disappointing numbers. Because there are people who would say, I'm trying to remember one. I think it was one AFC personnel executive was quoted by somebody as saying he's a freak among freaks. You know, so it's like there are people who are, you know, sort of, I don't want to use the word truther, but there are people who are true believers that Shaq Thompson is still, combine aside, one of the very best impact playmakers in the draft. And I would be willing to bet that a handful of them work for NFL teams, and as we saw with Tim Tebow, to keep looping one of these things, only takes one team to fall in love or be convinced that, you know, this is their only opportunity to take them. You know, so if the Steelers are one of them or another team's one of them, the 15 to 20 range, they go, you know what, we're not going to get another chance to get this guy. Forget it. He's awesome. We love him. You know, I could definitely see him going there. I would be surprised if just about every team passed on him and he's still there going into day two.
Also, beware any team that changes their opinion of a player, especially a high profile, you know, well-known player like Shaq Thompson, based on what they do with the scouting combine. You know, if there's any NFL team out there that does that, beware.
Smokescreen.
Beware their process, though.
beware their process. I mean, I think with Thompson, it's one of those things where, you know, he pops on tape. I think you go, okay, cool. Like, as long as he, you know, the Pac-12 is not one where you go, this conference, you know, the quality of competition is a question. But you know, when you see a guy who's on the border like that, measurables wise, and you're like, okay, cool. Like, as long as he tests out the way I think he's going to test out, he's a stud. And then he doesn't, you know, across the board, especially in the things people thought he would be great at, you know, slow 40, you know, no broad, you know, the short broad jump, low vertical jump, you know, you wanted explosion numbers. Actually, the ones that matter the most, really, for when we're talking about back seven, his short shuttle and three cone, those were good. He put up good cone numbers, and you want to see that change of direction, especially when you're talking about a potential safety. And that's notoriously one for linebackers, too, because I think in a 3-4, like Kiko Alonso in a 3-4, he probably would play inside, as he did a lot of the time in Washington also. You know, obviously, he wouldn't be an outside pass rusher at 236 pounds. You know, that's too small to come off the edge. But you know, he compares himself to sort of a Levante David, you know, and that's a comparison that makes some sense, but David's faster, David's bigger, you know, so as a 4-3 outside linebacker, you know, some might look at him and see a Levante David or DeAndre Levy. I still see him as a safety or, you know, Thomas Davis, a tweener, that can come up, and make some plays.
Yeah, I agree. I think that someone's going to get a steal there if anybody's scared off by the whatever those, you know, rumors going around.
For sure.
So before we yeah. wrap up here, I want to check something out here, cuz you brought it up a couple times about the Lions drafting cornerbacks in the first round. I want to see if you know who the last cornerback the Lions drafted in the first round was.
The last corner drafted in the first round wouldn't be, hold on, it's not Bryant Westbrook.
No
they
I think you can go back a little bit further than that. Not no. Too much further.
No. I am,
you can't cheat. You can't go to Pro Football Reference.
No, I'm not. No, that's what I'm coming, because I'm holding both my hands from sitting in my computer. I'm like, no, don't look. No, because they've drafted. Obviously, Slay was a second rounder. They went through, because all these guys are second rounders. All
right, I'll give you a hint. It was pre-Millen.
Yeah, because I was going to say, because Bryant Westbrook.
Well, half of Millen's first round draft picks were receivers anyway, so.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying, because I think it was 99, it was 98. Yeah, okay, if it's not Bryant Westbrook, then I can't,
98 is the year.
Okay.
It's Terry Fair from Tennessee.
Oh, Terry Fair. Okay, what was the year before?
I didn't look at that. I remember Terry Fair, and I looked at it to confirm that that was the last that they took, but I only looked at everything from 98 to now. So.
Yeah. Well, because the thing was with Westbrook, yeah, he was 97. He was the fifth overall. I was going to say, I'm like, I know they went top five with Bryant Westbrook, and then you said no before that, and I'm like, look.
Yeah, no, I was thinking of somebody else.
All right. Yeah, no, Terry Fair, and that was, that didn't work out well, because he not only was that, he didn't, because that was another measurables guy, another, you know, height.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And, you know, was toasted repeatedly, and then kind of came on a little bit, you know, started to figure it out a little bit. They moved him into nickel. He seemed to do a little bit better, and then he had a neck injury, like a I want to say a like the fourth fifth vertebrae fracture, and they kind of went, ooh,
yeah.
You should not you know, hit people with your head anymore for a living. That's probably not smart.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the Lions cornerbacks. And I got to double check. I'm pretty sure I went back and did a compilation going back to, I think it was Westbrook in 97. The Lions changed two starters out of the four in their secondary every single year since then. And I think that's still true.
I
think that's still active. I think it's one of those you have to there's one or two in the past couple seasons, you know, like whether you count Darius Slay as a starter, like they drafted him, they're like, he's not gonna start, but of course he was gonna start, and then he started in like the second game, you know. It's like, it's one of those you have to fudge a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
right
but basically, in terms of who was projected to be the starter or who did start that year,
yeah, it's been such a mess, it's been hard to even project, so
yeah
the quarterback situation, like, It started to get a little bit more stable last year, the last 2 years for the Lions, but I know that that secondary has just been kind of a carousel of, let's just plug this guy in at safety and this guy in a corner and this guy got hurt. Yeah. Okay, who do we got?
Well,
next?
And then you get halfway through the season and somebody got hurt, and then it's just a big question of who is that?
Who is that fifth string quarterback they brought up from the practice squad to play 370 snaps?
They just signed a guy on Tuesday and he's out there. What's going on?
Oh yeah, because they had safety was interested because they had Issa Abdul Kudus. And then they got they got Glover Quinn. He was the real long term answer. And then they snaked the Hedebo away from Baltimore, and he came on. He's holding out now, because at 32, after a career of being a fringe special teamer secondary guy, he goes out and picks off like six passes. He's like, you know what? I'm getting paid.
He's good. I mean, the Ravens knew that he was really good, and he knew that he was really good, and that's why they couldn't re-sign him.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he definitely, found a spot there. And then, four picks it was last year. But yeah, so the Lions, the secondary fail is almost unbelievable. I'm trying to quick Google search my old blog to see if I can find the post. But I mean, it's just beggars belief how many draft picks and resources were put into that secondary over and over and over and over and over.
But not a lot of first rounders.
Not a lot of first rounders, right? Exactly, but a ton of, okay, so yeah, I found it. Like Andre Goodman was a second rounder. Dre Bly, they've sank a ton of money into.
Oh God, Dre Bly.
Terry Holt, Torrey Holt's much lesser known little brother.
Terry Holt, not Torrey Holt.
Not Torrey Holt. Terry Holt. I think he was another second round safety. This is the thing that they did. Was second rounders and third rounders the whole time. Fernando Bryant, they signed from Jacksonville. They got, R.W. McCorders. Kenoy Kennedy from Jacksonville. Drafted, then they did second round safeties like 3 years in a row. Daniel Bullocks in the second round. Gerald Alexander in the second round. They got Lee Bodden from the Browns in 2008.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
In the Sean Rogers trade, I believe that was.
Yes, the Sean Rogers trade, yeah.
Yep, Lou Delmas in the second round. This is why they haven't drafted a lot of first-rounders in the secondary, because they keep blowing second-rounders. Darius Slay was a second-rounder. Amari Spivey from Iowa. I mean, they've been burning second and third round draft picks.
Receivers in the first round and secondary in the second round is just, that's the last 15 years of the Lions draft.
It's the Honolulu blueprint.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Good one. I like that.
Nice. Very nice.
I got one there. Meanwhile, Steelers haven't taken a single defensive back in round one since they took Troy Polamalu in 2013.
Well, hey.
There or 2003. Go. Sorry, 2013. 2003.
Oh man, that's
wow. Well, it helps when he's that good, though. That's the thing.
Well, they were just they.
It'd be one thing if the Lions hadn't drafted a corner in the first Lions round since Terry Fair. If Terry Fair was like 10 years All Pro or something.
The problem is the Lions were drafting these guys in the second round. The Steelers were drafting them in the fourth and fifth rounds. You got to get your corners in the fifth round. That's where you find your long term starters. That's where you get your Ike Taylors
and develop them.
Yes, and develop them.
Oh, yeah.
Draft them in the third, fourth, fifth round, and develop them.
And develop them, which is always a smart move.
That's enough of that logic and reason.
When you're talking about quarterbacks, whether you're talking about quarterbacks in round one or round five, the learning curve is steep, and you got to develop them either way.
It's draft season. We don't need this much logic and reason.
It's funny. This is something because, my whole life – I was always a draft Nick above and beyond other fans. As a kid, I have many vivid memories. I had my whole routine. I'd have my newspaper, like my Free Press. I'd have the Sports Illustrated draft guide, the Sporting News draft guide. I have a spiral notebook. I have a 2 liter of Cherry Coke and my bean bag. And that Saturday, I would just sit there writing. I had my mock. And then I had like the actual thing, so I'm writing guys down, I'm scratching off, I got a highlighter, I'm 10 years old. And if there was draft Twitter, hashtag draft Twitter, I would have been all over draft Twitter.
You'd be the king tween of draft
Twitter. Yeah, I would be the the fake, like the fake insider account being run by the 13-year-old that's like, oh, yeah. I'm here, such and such, you know, just like watching ESPN and like tweeting, like, you know, whatever Adam Schefter says or Mike Mayock, or, you know, whoever, you know, McShay going like, oh, I'm hearing like teams are hot on this guy, and I'd have 200,000 followers because that's just how it works on draft Twitter. But, you know, so it's like the more and more I do this, you know, and I can't keep up. It's become such a cottage industry now. You know, I'm an NFL analyst. I'm an NFL columnist. You know, I can't do the draft as my part-time job along with NFL analysis as my full-time job. And I feel like so much of this, as fun as the draft is, as amazing as the draft is, as so much there is to dig into, there's so much great stuff, and it's so much fun to mock and do all these scenarios. I feel like we need to, like when we have our BR team stream now updates, like every pick analysis, you know, Matt Miller, he's, I'm B minus, like Chris Sims, like, I think you're a little more optimistic. And yeah, I think B plus. And then they go back and forth and back and forth. And then at the end, Adam Lefko goes, and remember, half of these guys are going to suck and we don't know which half. Like, we just need to have that perspective of like the odds say, and that's just the first rounders.
The odds are not in any football player's favor, regardless of where they're drafted, what position they play, and what team drafts them, really.
Yeah, and the odds are that for 80% of these guys, you know, 5 years from now, 8 years from now, 10 years from now, somebody is going to say Shaq Thompson, and you're going to go, oh, God, Shaq Thompson.
Oh, God. Oh, no, oh, that guy.
Gonna be good, like, remember, oh yeah, because Polamalu retired, right? Oh yeah, you know, and it's like it's for me, it's harder and harder, you know, I'm more, my instinct is to more have that perspective and go, okay, this is a lot of fun, this is really awesome, we get to know these kids a lot better, we come into the NFL knowing who they are a lot more, as opposed to just like, you know, waking up the next day and, you know, because adult fans, when I was a kid, you know, it'd be like, okay, open up the paper. Hey, who'd the Lions draft? Some kid I don't know. Did they draft anybody from Michigan State or Michigan? No. Okay. All right. Whatever. You know, and so, you know, basically outside of the first round, nobody knew, nobody cared. You know, I think this is an improvement, but I also think when you're sitting here going like, oh my gosh, you know, Adrian Amos from Penn State, we can snake him in the fifth round and that will solve all our safety problems this year. It's like, no, guys, no. Like, it's so unlikely that any of these guys are going to come in and play like superstars or even credible starters, you know, once you get out of the first round or two. And even then, it's a crapshoot. Even then, you still get guys who are supposed to be can't-miss prospects. You know, you, me, and Matt Miller can swear up and down that Justin Gilbert, or even at other positions, you know, I thought Jake Matthews was going to step right in and play left tackle. He's been playing left tackle for...
We all did.
Yeah, we all did.
We all did.
It's that much of a crapshoot with this, especially in the secondary.
And that's you know, I think that's a good note to leave our listeners on right now, because, you know, everybody gets so focused in, so laser focused, so tunnel vision on the draft, on getting it right, on these players have to contribute and contribute big time in their first year, second year, regardless of where they're drafted, or else it's a waste of a pick. It's a real crapshoot. I mean, there's location, there's timing, there's the depth chart, does someone else get injured? You know, this guy could be a promising right guard, but now he's a right tackle because the right tackle got injured. And turns out this guard sucks at being a tackle.
Yeah.
Well, he wasn't supposed to be a tackle, now was he?
Nope.
Weird things happen.
Crazy. Who could project? Who could have known? Ah, boy. Well, thank you guys so much for having me on. It was always fun. This is a blast. You know, we could do this anytime.
Oh, we could do this
and not even record it. We could just talk like this and have fun. It'd be great.
Absolutely. Before we let you go, let our listeners know where they can find you on the internet, Ty.
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, Bleacher Report, bleacherreport.com, on Twitter at Ty Shalter, and that's TYSCHALTER. You probably won't get it right on the first try, but I'm pretty easy to find. And then I. I actually can't quite say, yeah, but I have another place I'm going to be publishing some stuff also to this, you know, this summer and off season. So keep your eyes tuned to the Twitter feed. I'll let you know.
Ah, Ty's got some projects in the works.
Cool.
That's always good.
Oh, and of course, if you have SiriusXM, I have a weekly SiriusXM radio show with Jason Cole on BR Radio. That is 11 to 1 on Sundays. So during the season, it's the 2 hours before the 1 o'clock games. It's the same time slot, even though there's no games after us this off season. That's Sirius 93 XM 208.
Awesome.
Excellent. Well, thanks as always for joining us, Ty. And of course, we'll do this again. And might just take you up in the offer some night we got nothing to do and want to talk about football.
Sure.
We're just going to bother you.
Absolutely. I'll be there.
Sounds good. All right. Thanks again for joining us and have a wonderful night.
My pleasure. You too. I think of rhymes when I'm in the Detroit state of mind. State of mind. Detroit state of mind. Detroit state of mind. Detroit state of mind. Yo, he had the dreams that I'm a gangster, sipping no bottles of rosé, chilling with my out-of-town connect named Jose, trying to hustle for more pay, police in my doorway. I never have my head in the clouds, because they can go great, and that ain't my forte. And again, a huge thanks to Bleacher Report NFL analyst Ty Schalter for joining us this week. It's always a good conversation.
Yeah, great stuff.
It's always good to, you know, just have a nice football conversation and just pawn it off like a podcast. It's nice. it's always fun to talk about football with guys like Ty who love the game or are enthusiastic about the game and love to talk about it. So
mm-hmm.
Big thank you to him, and we'll be certain to have him back. Before we let you all go, it's time for our new feature here on the F-Ball NFL podcast. We were doing that little giant book of football facts, and if any of y'all were finding discrepancies in said facts, to let us know on Twitter. Apparently this book is either spot on or nobody's doing some fact checking. So we're going to try something different. I have a stockpile of NFL player tops cards, mostly tops cards from the past couple of seasons. And I'm going to throw out a few clues about the card that is currently in my hand. And if you can guess who this player is.
Guess the player.
And you're the first one to guess the player. And you can either tweet at me at @FBall_Andrea or at Brian at BFAT65, BFAT65 on Twitter. If you're the first one to identify this player, we will send you this trading card as your reward. So without further ado, here are the identifying clues that you can use to figure out who this player is. He is a reliable veteran wide receiver. I believe it was about 3 or 4 years ago when NFL players were polled, or quarterbacks were polled, who would you want catching that last game-winning touchdown if it was a fourth-quarter game-winning drive scenario? This was the wide receiver most players in the NFL picked to be the guy to catch that pass, the guy they'd want to catch that pass. He's one of the nicest guys in the league, one of the most talented wide receivers in the league, the kind of guy that makes you say, damn, I wish this guy had a Super Bowl ring to help cap off his career.
And what year was he drafted in?
He was drafted in 2004.
2004.
He was a first-round pick. He was a wide receiver from 2004, beloved around the league, a very good guy. Highly respected, and if you can guess who this player is.
I think that's enough information.
Yeah, I think that's enough information. If you can guess who this player is, we will send you this card. So be sure to tweet at myself or Brian with your best guess, and the first person to get it right, we will send you this trading card.
All right.
So with that, I guess that marks the end of this week's episode of the F-Ball NFL podcast. Again, thank you to Bleacher Report's Ty Schalter for joining us as our special guest in this week's episode. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst. I cover the NFL, the Browns and the Steelers, for BleacherReport.com. Starting Monday, I will be covering the entire NFL and it's all the attendant breaking news for SportsNot.com. And I also am
That's
a...
Sports... Spell that?
SportsNaut. Like an astronaut, but instead of astro, it's sports.com.
Very nice.
I also am a fantasy football contributor at Pro Football Focus. That's profootballfocus.com. And you can find me on Twitter at fball_Andrea. That's FBALL_Andrea.
And as always, because I haven't changed my name.
As always.
I am Brian. And besides this podcast, I can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
Well, be sure to throw in your best guesses as to who we are referring to in these trading cards. Be sure to give Ty Shalter a follow on Twitter if you aren't already. And be sure, of course, to tune in every week here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, especially as we get closer to what is promising to be a very exciting, unpredictable 2015 NFL draft.
Absolutely.
And until then, enjoy your springtime weather, should it be hitting you, whether it's warm weather or it's stormy weather.
Enjoy the Masters this weekend.
And, of course, enjoy the Masters. It's a tournament unlike any other, is what I've been told.
Even if you don't like golf, it's still kind of a cool one to watch. So.
And until we meet with you again, we'll be back next time here at the F-Ball NFL podcast.
Later.
Peace.